Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Today is a very special broadcast indeed, with quite a number of guests will be coming on throughout the day. I guess the head honcho of this pack of incredible people is Lorianne Fenton. Lorianne, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Vinny. I really appreciate you having us on the show today. I'm here to talk about the Super Soldier Summit coming up in Henderson, Nevada on May 17th, 18th, and 19th. And it's going to be 2.5 days of packed information. I don't even know how to describe it to you because it's just crazy. I mean, we have super soldiers. We've got mind control. We've got people who are hearing voice-to-skull communication. We've got people that are controlled by artificial intelligence. We've got people driving from Georgia that swear that there's Navy SEALs that sit behind a computer desk and beam thoughts into their head. I mean, we've got all kinds of stuff going on here. And you know what, Vinny? I've been dealing with this for a while now. And I got to tell you, a year and a half ago, if you had told me that I would be putting on a super soldier mind control conference, I would have told you, no way. There's no way. I didn't even believe in any of this stuff. And then I had my experience, which I think I'd like to tell the audience a little bit about to start kick this off today, if we could. And then also, in having said that, the most important thing people need to realize is that these people are not crazy. I don't care what anybody says. They are not crazy. These things are happening to them. And whether it's happening in the way that they're describing it is up for, you know, grabs. Because we're all still trying to find out what it is that they're actually doing to these people. But even if 1% or 5% of it's true, that's still way too much for me, because that means the government is still conducting these mind control experiments that they swear they stopped back in the 60s and the 70s. So, and we have proof that they've continued this, as you know, Vinny. So go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, what occurs to me is this, you know, you're talking about how these people aren't crazy. Well, I would act under the assumption that truth in itself is usually the craziest thing. And so, therefore, if you're telling the truth, you will appear crazy. Whether or not you are is a different story. And sometimes revealing great truth to you and that kind of thing can, in fact, drive you nuts. And I was just thinking while you're saying this about all these different topics that we're going to be covering today, And you know what it made me think of? Made me think of Mel Gibson in the movie Conspiracy Theory. How he's talking about all these crazy things going on or whatever, and then it turns out they're all real.
Exactly. You know, that is one of my favorite movies, and it's so funny because after I had my experience, I thought about that movie and I thought, oh my God, it's so true. All these things are so true, and they do happen to people. And I have four women today that are actually coming on besides myself. It's the women's show today, Vinny. And they're going to tell about all their different, completely different experiences around this. And I will be the first to say that I don't understand a lot of this. And these women all have different pieces to the puzzle. Misha Johnston has had an experience that is quite different from Niara Isley's experience, and both of their experiences are very different than Alara Blackwell's or Melinda Leslie's experience. Some deal with aliens, some deal with military, some deal with people they've never seen or have ever met in person, that they're just electronic communication. So, you know, it's really hard to tell what's really going on here. So I believe it involves all of it. I also believe, and you're going to laugh at me when I say this, Vinny, the time traveler dudes like Andy Bishago and Alfred Weber and Laura Eisenhower, I think they're a part of it. And I believe that the aliens, if they do exist, the reptilians and the grays are also part of it as well. And I think this is all connected, but, you know, we've yet to see. I think in the next 5 years, we're going to figure this all out. And I think there's going to be some very amazing discoveries as far as how the government has been involved with these critters, as I call them, over the years. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so we have a lot of people to get through today, so let's not waste our time. And we also have a caller on the line, so let me just see if I can get this in order. I'm suffering from major sleep deprivation at the moment. So firstly, we'll go to this caller and see who it is. You're in a 310 area code. What's your business? Hello?
Well, this is Melinda. I'm one of your guests.
Hello, Melinda. How are you today?
Thank you for All having right. me.
Well, how about we start with you then, Melinda? Why don't you tell us a little bit about your experiences?
All right. Well, I am a lifetime abductee in the classic sense, meaning alien experiences. And I have been doing research into what's known probably amongst your listeners and certainly those attending the conference as MILABS or MILABS, which is an acronym for military abduction, which has come to mean many things, but in my research, most specifically, and I can also talk to some of the other things it's come to mean, but in my research, it refers to people who've had alien abduction who then also have covert military involvement, harassment, surveillance, re-abduction of their experience, and other subsequent activity involving either covert ops or the military. And I'm sure by the time this show is over with, I can speak quite a bit to how I think that has it's the information they're getting from the abductees has everything to do with the whole idea of super soldiers, because it's what they're learning from the abductees. That they are using that information to train and create people who can interact with ETs, and even more important, the ETs themselves is with the technology. So they're creating people who can interact regularly with ET technology, and that's part of the whole development of super soldiers is from that. So I'm thrilled to be an upcoming speaker at this conference, because I'm always talking to a UFO crowd, to a UFO conference, to MUFON groups, this kind of thing, about how my research is really strong evidence in support of alien abduction, and also how it's really strong evidence in support of there being a policy of non-disclosure, in other words, a continued cover-up of the whole UFO subject, mostly because of the importance of the technology and the fact that developing the technology and those black budgets, and everybody kind of you know, doing a CYA, you know, covering their own and wanting to protect their projects. But I love the fact that I can take my information now, fully extend it out and saying, okay, we know all that. Yeah, okay, there's a cover-up. It has everything to do with that. It has everything to do with abductions. But what it really has to do with is, what are they doing with the information? And what they're doing with the information they're learning from us abductees, from the people with these experiences, I believe what they're doing with it is both they're developing technology, and you guys, I'm sorry, I'm on a radio interview. Feel free to pick up a flyer right here if you want. These people just walked in. That was perfect timing, though, you guys. I'll explain that in a minute. But as I was saying, it's really great to be able to take it to what are they doing with the information. I think that's where these roads cross. It's exactly what they're doing with this information.
All right. I got a joke there about abduction. I'm not sure if you can joke about abduction, but, you know, do they use abduct tape?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear you. If you can ask me that one more time.
I was just wondering, when these abductions happen, do they use a lot of abduct tape?
Oh.
I think we had to coin that one. I think we had to.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. That was one I thought heard. That was very good.
Apparently it works on everything.
they might.
Some
people have been restrained, so maybe that is using abduct tape at sometimes, maybe.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go into our other guests as well. We've got Misha Johnston. Are you there?
Vinny, Misha? I think we lost Misha. And they've been trying to get her back, but it looks like she's non-available. So we'll probably have to go to Niara.
Yeah, Niara.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, about me. I grew up with aspirations to just get married and have a couple of children and live in a beautiful place in nature. It's not how it turned out. where do I start? I went into the military because my dad raised me to be a patriot. And went through my tour of duty. I was stationed at Nellis Air Force Base and worked at Tonopah and Tulitcha Peak electronic warfare ranges. And it was kind of a turbulent time back there. Back then I was a single mom and, you know, trying to deal with stuff. And I didn't remember... about 10 years after getting out of the military, I realized through a conversation with a friend that I didn't remember anything about working at Tonopah. And that really concerned me. I had a wave of nausea come up with the realization that I couldn't remember. And
what is that going on in the background? Is there something printing out?
Yeah, maybe somebody that has noise in the background could mute their microphone.
Yeah, that'd be a smooth move.
Yeah. So, anyway, I discovered that I couldn't remember anything about working at Tonopah, not even the most minute details, you know, just insignificant things. You know, I couldn't remember people that I worked with. I couldn't remember anything. And, so I remember having a wave of nausea as I realized that I couldn't remember. And then later on, just about a year later, maybe a little more, a little less, I had hypnosis with Bud Hopkins at the Whole Life Expo in Las Vegas, Nevada. That just kind of, you know, blew everything open for me, and I realized that something had happened to me when I was working at Tonopah. The Tonopah and Tulitcha Peak electronic warfare ranges, or electronic combat ranges as they were known later on, are both situated within the Nevada test site, as is Area 51. also called Dreamland, also called The Ranch, probably a few other names. And I hear that the people that work there don't call it Area 51. So, for whatever that's worth. Anyway, I discovered that I'd been taken out in the middle of the night to test radar on UFOs. And then I was worked over with what I've come to know as trauma-based mind control. Not really to become a super soldier. I wasn't programmed or abused or traumatized in that way. But I was traumatized to the degree that I forgot everything that I saw. And it's caused me to really do an in-depth study of trauma-based mind control, what it is, you know, how they try to suppress memories actually by using our own defense mechanism against us. Because when the human brain is, or when the human mind is presented with a trauma that is so overwhelming to the ego that it can't process it, it actually breaks off that experience and sticks it in the subconscious so that it can sit there and wait until you can handle it to come out to your conscious mind again. So ready or not, I had hypnosis with Bud Hopkins, and I got memories back, and I've been dealing with the emotional fallout for many years, and I'm in pretty darn good shape today, but I still have moments where I have post-traumatic stress, you know, like PTSD. And but it's less and less, and I'm really working hard on learning some skills for trauma recovery, because I know all the years that I had PTSD and I didn't know who to turn to for help because the trauma was so far outside normal mainstream understanding that I didn't know who to go to. I couldn't go to just a regular therapist who had no knowledge of this kind of thing. They would, you know, I was afraid they'd lock me up, you know, for fantasizing something. And so I just had PTSD and tried to manage it on my own for years. And it's not fun. It really isolates you. It sets you outside the rest of humanity, and you're just kind of alone, you know. So because of all that and going through that and how difficult it was, I'm trying to learn some trauma recovery techniques that are fairly streamlined that I can offer to other people like myself who have been traumatized and want to release the trauma and
Well, we're coming to break. Hopefully that's not too traumatic. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland in this little island change nation. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister is good for the economy because now everybody can snap up a part-time job to make up for the shortfall, which he caused by getting us under croakiest quantities of debt. All right. So, we're running through the list here. We still have people to introduce. This is like the most people we've ever had on the show. I don't know how the dynamic's going to work. I'm pretty sure it will be quite dynamic, though. All right, now, next person to introduce, the person who was cutting off before, Misha Johnston. Welcome.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me today.
Thank goodness it works. Well,
okay.
Would you like to explain what you're about?
Well, okay. Well, I'm the oldest of the group that I know of so far. My experiences started back as a child. I mean, I was from a family I've now found out that was a mind control family. Situations where they set up a family and basically do a lot of using of them. So I'm going to skip forward to the first time. I really don't want to go into at this point. My father and his part in it, but needless to say, he was my trainer. But in 1967, I had the first military alien abduction. Before that, as a child, at three, I started having experience from ETs, and so it continued on. And then in 1967, I had an experience that I remembered very vividly of an ET experience. But then afterwards, I had an experience that was very dark and you know, it had sexual connotations. It was really a really negative experience. And when I I've done several regressions on that particular area, and I found out that that was the first recollection in my puberty that I remembered having military and the alien. Then, you know, kind of fast forward to 1968, and I was supposedly, I met this man at a college that I really wasn't even attending, except that I now found out that I joined a group. You get paid for, you know, doing their research projects and such. And so in 68, I ended up getting married to this Navy Marine corpsman that I have no idea. Don't remember him. Don't remember the wedding. Found out that that's, I guess, pretty much the first time that any kind of altar did come out. That's why I don't remember the wedding, because an altar was the one that went through the wedding. So they accessed me. That was it. Basically, I found out his job was to legally get women, I should say, to, and this ended up, I was in Seattle, and it was white slavery, some really ugly ritualistic abuse stuff and things like that. Then I got out of that by him they released me and sent me home on a bus, and him saying in my mind this story that I had been sick for 7 months, and that's why I didn't remember any of it, that I'd had what they call encephalitis, a brain disease, which I double checked and I couldn't have had it. I'm not a baby. So then in 68, I was re-accessed once more, and this time they took me to San Francisco. Several things happened there. You know, if you want questions later, anything like that, I'll be glad to answer them. It's a very long story because that goes the length of my life, basically. But then I was working with Melinda back in 1999 and 2000 to research a book for my labs and the surveillance of the, you know, the black ops and all of that. And they seemed to come really hard on me and heavy on me. And after three automobile accidents in a short while, what else? A couple of other things. I had a rapist stalker after me. I had another situation. I had a crazy tweaker guy that they sent in as my roommate, and he was, you know. So I'm not sure that was one of them, but you know, you start wondering. Everything's so strange.
Oh, so always have to worry about tweakers. You know, you're just walking through the city and you see them dart into alleys like.
right. And but he got me to end up being basically homeless because I had to move out overnight or end up being dead by his tweaker friend. So anyway, during this time, I'm having threats. I'm having calls. I'm getting calls where all I hear is a sound, a tone, a noise. I get broken into my conversations that they're going to, you know, shut me up. And I had an encounter with a man that I was supposed to re-interview him for the information on the My Lab book, and he ended up being a really dangerous black ops fellow who said, you know, basically, we'll kill your family, and they won't find their bodies in the desert if you don't shut up. So I got out of it in 2000, into 2000, beginning of 2001, and then got back into the groups that I now facilitate here in Vegas back in 2010. And so I have some MK Ultra groups that I facilitate on UVU now. So okay. That's kind of it.
All right. And who else have we got left that we haven't introduced yet? Alara. Alara, are you there? Scrambling for the unmute button, perhaps? Nope.
Looks okay, like then. She's having mic problems, Vinny. So, yeah. Let's see. Well, you know what we could do? We could go back to Alara in a minute, and I could tell my story about how I got into this, if that's okay.
That's right. We have yet to do that.
Yeah. Well, mine's pretty simple. Back in September of 2011, I was putting on UFO conferences and representing people in my publishing company that are UFO authors, Bigfoot authors, you know, anything kind of fringe. I was starting to represent these people because that's what I do for a living in the real world. And I also put on conferences and art events for the last 30 years in the real world. So I just started putting on UFO conferences. Anyhow, so I went to Awake and Aware in Project Camelot's Awake and Aware, September 22nd, 23rd, 2011, and I'm sitting there, and Duncan O'Finian and his girlfriend, Axe, her real name is Miranda, I believe, are on stage Friday night, and they're talking about their experiences as super soldiers. And Miranda says this amazing thing. She says, "I have been hearing screaming in the back of my head most of my life, and I just about fell off my chair, and I'm looking around the room to see how many other people are falling off their chairs, and nobody else is, you know, even registering that she just said this. And I had been hearing screaming in the back of my head since I was in my 20s. I noticed it when I was trying to meditate, and so I stopped meditating because I didn't like the sensation. When I was in my 30s, it was still there. I noticed it quite a bit when I'd fall asleep and wake up. That's when I'd hear it. But it was so distant, and you know, it wasn't bothering me all the time, but it was enough that I knew it was there. And I thought, here, when I was a baby, I ate rat poisoning, and they had, in the hospital, they had taken sandbags, little sandbags, to pin me down so I wouldn't move during this rat poisoning episode, because apparently, if you move around a lot, the it's gross, but you die because your red corpuscles explode. So they didn't want me moving, so they had done this. So I always attributed this, and I went to a therapist about it. I said, you know, is this screaming me as a baby trying to move and these people doing weird things to me? She goes, more than likely it is. When I was in my 40s, I realized the voice was of an older me. If it was me, it wasn't me as a baby screaming. It was me as an, more like a teenager adult screaming. And so anyhow, I this had been in the back of my head, and you know, something I didn't deal with on a daily basis at all. Hadn't thought about for years. And I'm sitting there in this conference, and this woman says that she has this too. And I really freaked out. I had a moment of like, ooh, I wonder what's going on here. So because I had my whole life tried to put this off as something that happened as a baby. So there I am. I'm sitting there, and I got very scared. I don't even know how to explain it to any, but I got really frightened. I knew that something was going to shake loose. You know how you just have that knowing that something's going to happen to you? So so I'm sitting there, and I'm like, And my friend that I went to the conference with says, oh, we have to talk to them. We've got to talk to Miranda and Duncan. And I'm like, I don't know. Previous to this, I had told everybody I was thinking about putting on a conference for the super soldiers. I could not figure out in that moment when I got to the conference why they didn't have their own conference. You know, very naively, I had mentioned to my friends, oh, I should put on a conference for these guys. They really deserve it. You know, here I am, crazy me, like, oh, yeah, la-di-da, right? So then this happens on Friday night. Okay, go to Saturday. Saturday night, we're were trying to leave, and I'm still having a very frightened feeling in the pit of my stomach going, I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing with this, right? And my girlfriend keeps saying, we got to talk to Duncan, we got to talk to Duncan. I'm like, okay. And I thought, well, we'll talk to him Sunday. So I'm trying to escape the building and go out by the back exit door around the trash cans to get to my car to avoid everybody. But who's standing right there but Duncan and Miranda? So my girlfriend runs up to them. She started talking to Duncan. And so I, you know, saunter over to Miranda and I say, hey, what's this thing about the screaming in your head? She goes, why do you ask? And I say, because I've got it too. And she goes, oh, you got to ask yourself two things. Do I really want to know? And if I did find out, do I really want to know the answer? You know? And I'm like, I don't think I want to know. She goes, that's probably the right answer. And I said, good. So, you know, at that moment, it's very interesting, Vinny. You have to make that decision. If you're one of these people that's caught up in these programs, you have to decide that that is the past. You have to get through the emotions of it and say that's the past and everything is different from this point forward. And that is really the key, I think, to escaping their programming. Because if you fall into this loop of, oh, poor, pitiful me, and relive it and relive it and relive it, which is what they want you to do, you will never be free from it. So that is one of the things I found out in that moment. So go on to the next day. I'm talking to Bill Ryan of Project Camelot, and he's with a young gentleman that I thought was like 20 years old. Turns out he's more in his 30s, and it turns out to be James Rink. And James says to me, I heard you're putting on a super soldier conference, and I'm a super soldier. And I went, oh, cool, I want to talk to you. So I said, come to my table. He comes to my table later on in the evening. He's with another gentleman. This gentleman, I look up from the table, and Vinny, the first words out of my mouth are, oh my God, I know you. And he doesn't really recognize me, but I recognized him. And it was a, you know, again, a deep knowing sensation of like, wow, you know. So we all went to dinner that night. They told me a whole bunch of things about super soldiers. And in that moment, I realized I'd gotten in way over my head about announcing that I'd helped them all out. But being me, and I'm a very, you know, I'm a strong, bullheaded person. And when I say I'm going to do something, I follow through. So I promised them I'd do that. And now here's where it really gets weird. The next morning I wake up, and as I'm waking up, I have a full-blown recall of having been with this gentleman named Max Spears, who's the guy we went to dinner with that I said, I recognize you. A full-blown recall of an incident that happened, and I can't talk about it because it's highly sexual and highly bizarre. And but I'm telling you, it's either real or they beamed a whole movie in my head. Because it was so full-blown unreal, I couldn't believe it. And when I came out of it, I cried for about 4 hours and really got myself together. Now, you got to remember something. When they mess with you like this, they're messing with your hormones, the chemicals in your body, the chemicals in your brain, and they had me convinced that we'd had a relationship. So now I wake up, and here's the other kicker. I'm about 17 in this relationship, in the full-blown-on memory or recall or whatever you want to call it, and Max is like 22. In this reality, I'm 55 and he's 35. So, and, you know, and of course I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, you know, this is so bizarre. How can this be? Now, I'm not saying this couldn't have been a past life. But if it was, why did we look the same and why are we, you know, remembering things that should be happening in this timeline? So I'm a little confused about the whole thing. I still haven't really addressed it at all. I am well over what happened to me. It took me 3 months, though, to be able to talk to Max again.
All right. Well, Laurie, we'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And welcome back. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand. You know, you got to love this country. It's full of scumbags that work for the World Bank and wind up becoming in charge of everything. I wonder if there's super soldier programs and things like that going on in New Zealand. That'd be very interesting. You guys ever hear about anything happening in other countries, or is it mostly just the Operation Paperclip Nazi scientists that came over to the United States that sort of set up all these programs? I wonder.
It happens in other countries.
Okay. Question asked, answer given. Now, the other person who we have not yet heard from is Alara. Is it working now?
Yes, I should be good.
Okay, excellent. So, Alara, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I don't know. I don't know where to start. I guess 2010, I recovered memories of being a part of military black ops programs, something that I was indoctrinated into as a child and probably even set up from my birth, which I've been doing research in lately. I came out with my information about a year ago and got thrown into the conspiracy theory pool, straight into the deep end, in a field that I had no interest in whatsoever until I realized I was right smack in the middle of it, and have had to deal with the consequences since. It's not an easy field to play in, especially dealing with super soldiers and mind control, just because it is so confusing, convoluted, disturbing, and there's a lot of different people coming out with information that makes things a little bit hard to wade through. And I had to really come to terms that I had to deal with my own personal truth about what happened to me and what's been going on, and still seeking the answers without getting discouraged, because apparently there's an entire campaign I didn't even realize about people talking about me. I had no idea. And I almost stopped talking about this completely and actually didn't decide to keep talking about what happened to me in these projects until February of this year. Again, I took about 6 months off just not talking about it. A little bit about what I was involved in. From what I remember, I was a part of a couple of projects. One involved remote viewing for our government. I was programmed using harmonics and different sounds. I have a very huge aversion to anything electricity, so I'm pretty sure there was some sort of shock therapy involved. Of course, drugs and deep-seated hypnotic sessions. So, I do have memories of remote viewing different countries, politicians, political meetings that I was repeating back to whoever I was talking to, I guess you can call my handler, learning how to do different things to influence people remotely, be it their emotions, their ideas. When I saw the movie Inception, I was kind of like taken aback a little bit, because it was a lot kind of like that, where you implant these hypnotic suggestions into people, but then they think it's their own idea. So I was kind of, I thought it was an interesting movie, but I was kind of hit close to home in that. And I was also part of a project where I was merging with perhaps super soldiers or highly trained individuals to give them remote information about whatever battlefield or operation they were on, breaking into places. But that would require me to be out of body in an out of body remote viewing, and then merging with that person so I could send them the information about where to go, what the whole place looked like, acting as like a second consciousness to them. And a lot of this was done, I would be able to pick them up because they had some sort of chemical in the cerebral spinal fluid, or maybe even nanites, since somebody brought that up recently in conversation. I'm not really sure. They just looked like a glowing light stick to me, like when I looked in that out-of-body perception. So I've been trying to piece together a lot of this still and coming up with some very interesting things as I continue to find out what's been going on and speak up about this and see if anybody else. I have not met anyone that I've worked with yet, though I do recognize different programs and artificial intelligences within other people. So I'm very good as a receiver in that way.
Right. Okay. Well, that has managed to organize everybody and get them onto this. So let's run through the list. This is like the Avengers, you know.
Got the yes, it is, isn't it, Vinny? I love it.
I guess I'm the Hulk in that. In that equation, and Lorian is Captain America.
Yes, I always wanted to be Captain America. Wonder Woman would be nicer, but Captain America I'll take.
Yeah. So we've got Melinda, the abductee. We've got Lorian Fenton, the organizer of the conference, with screaming in her head that she doesn't want to look into because it's too scary.
In my head. Actually, Vinny, I got to make one before you go on here, I got to make one statement. The screaming went away when I was 53 years old. I think they removed an implant.
Was that okay? I was going to ask if that was after your divorce.
Well, those are always fun to talk about, but that's for another day. No, I think I had an implant removed, and shortly after that, I realized I wasn't hearing it when I was waking up anymore. So that was quite interesting, too. And people are going to say that's crazy, but it's all true, folks. I wouldn't make this up. I'm a very grounded individual, so this is just, this is all very true. And one other quick thing to say here, Alara is of the younger group. And you will notice that they are not as sexually abused as the older group of super soldiers, mind control people out there. It's a very interesting observation. So, folks, take notice.
Wasn't the 60s and 70s like the sexual revolution and all of that kind of stuff? Maybe.
Well, we'll have to talk to Melinda, Niara, and Misha about that because, they're more of a... I think Niara is the younger of the three, if I remember correctly, but... definitely, they were using sexual persuasion back then much more, and they were also using it as torture. So, and mind control. So, we'll talk to them more about that. But I just wanted to point that out to people. The younger people have a whole different way of being programmed. So it's very interesting.
Well, we're talking about a development in the programs that do the programming.
Exactly. They use completely different types of programming now. It's much more insidious now. They use chemicals, hormones, your own body against you. They can do electronic signatures, nanites. They have implants now that are undetectable. They're not like the old ones. Douglas Dietrich actually saw a woman in Letterman Army Hospital in San Francisco when he was in there, supposedly for an ulcer. We're still trying to figure that one out, but he saw a woman that had these chips implanted in her inner skull and wires coming out of it. And this was back in the, I'd say, late 60s, early 70s. And I know for a fact that Dr. Richard Allen Miller was doing the same kind of experiments with his partner at the University of Washington near Seattle back in the very early 70s as well. So we know that type of thing was going on where they were actually implanting these microchips under the, in the skull, into the brain, and doing research on that. So it has come a long way.
Well, they found that when you implant microchips into the brain starts to learn how to use them and interface with them on its own.
That's true. I've actually heard that from Dr. Miller and a couple of other scientists that did work in that area. It's so bizarre. The electricity, the current that runs through our body is enough to make these chips work as well. So, yeah, very crazy, I'm telling you. But now it's very different. I mean, you can talk to Alara about this a little bit more, but it's I believe it's electronic frequencies and your electronic signature, because we all have one, and they're all different, just like fingerprints.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of the insanity of psychiatry. So way back in the... I mean, dig this. I mean, hear me out here. Way back in the day when in the first instances of psychiatry, they're doing horrible things to people, they're dunking them into big pools of ice water inside a coffin or something like that, or they're basically just torturing them and saying that this will help you with your madness. And now, psychiatry, the basic principles haven't changed really at all. They're still just making stuff up. But now... they've got these really nice coats and all of these drugs and all of these machines and devices and things like that that make it appear a lot more humane when it's just as bad, right?
Exactly.
Is that not entirely dissimilar to what we're talking about here? Bunch of mad scientists, people messing with innocent human beings and just using all the tools of the trade as the time goes on.
Exactly, and developing finer and finer and refined tools to do it with, like pills or a vaccine that they're actually putting in you that is tagging you at like a GPS tracking system. I mean, I don't even know where to start, Vinny. I jumped into this rabbit hole, and every time I look around me as I'm falling, I see another door opening, and I see another scene of what they're doing now and how they're, you know, doing it. And the worst part is, since I am the person that is putting on the conference over the last year, I put on the first one last June, and since that time, my phone has not stopped ringing about the things that they're doing to people. And, you know, I can't believe everybody, but if I listen to what they have to say and the things that they're describing that they're using to interface with them, and I started lists, and I've got these lists, and when five people all over the United States and in the UK come around and say to me, this is what's going on to me, and they all are the same thing, then I realize there's something going on here. Because these people don't know each other. They just found me, and they're telling me a story. So,
yeah, that's true. And denial's a very powerful thing, isn't it? And most people will deny that these things are even possible or even take place. And I think that's the vast majority of society. I think they'll deny everything, even when there's evidence, even when it's repeated over and over again. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. It's hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And also, that was another element that I wanted to explore too, because I talked about the sort of parallels here between the psychiatric, psychotic industry and the super soldier programs. And I was just thinking, there must be many people who have not managed to retain sanity, as it were, as you ladies have. Have you encountered or heard stories of people who've been completely and utterly destroyed by these programs, just incapable of operating as regular human beings can?
This is Melinda. Can you guys hear me? This is Melinda.
Yes, Melinda.
Oh, good. I wasn't sure if I was unmuted. Thank you. First off, I'll answer what you just said, which is yes. And in my research, I've dealt with people that have all sorts of emotional problems, and that can come and go. For instance, I'm sure Misha is probably chomping at the bit to say something here, because she herself is an example of someone that had a lot of, not so much psychological problems, but had problems with this in such a way, and that required her to actually pull out of the field or pull out of, you know, being public about it for quite a while. I'm sure Niara could address this too for her background, but I'm just saying, in the research, that this is really common that some people do have a worse time with it. I know some people that have turned to alcoholism because of their involvement, other drug use, psychiatric care, extreme alternative lifestyle stuff. Some people, the most common thing is people get oversaturated and they just withdraw from having anything to do with the subject. And I know quite a few people that have had that happen because it's overwhelming. So, I think, Lorianne said something very brilliant earlier when she said, and I agree wholeheartedly, that you have to make that strong decision if you're going to look into this and explore it and be willing to say, from now on, I'm going to have a new life. And I mean, I know myself, Nisha, Niara, my guess is Alara too, even though I've not met her before, I can tell from her story. So, you know, that we have all done that, and that is such a brilliant grasp of what it takes. And Lorianne, that was extremely insightful for you to say that. I applaud you. But the other thing I wanted to add, are we still here?
Yes.
Okay, good. I wasn't hearing anything. The other thing I really wanted to say is I'm realizing as we're all sharing our stories, we have, and I think this show together came together brilliantly. First off, it's a women's show, which is great. Not that that's necessary, but we, the five of us represent different phases of this process, and it really it has become very clear to me, and I can relate it directly to at least my research, that on one hand, like for instance, I come at this as I'm an alien abductee who had my lab experiences because of being an alien abductee. Misha, I think, it was first a mind control person, you know, with a mind control background, then finding out she was alien abductee, and then my lab. And I just want to say that every one of us, all five processes I've seen in many, many cases. So to have an alien abductee who then gets involvement with the covert op stuff, and then to have a mind control person who then later finds out they're an alien abductee who then also has the covert ops involvement. Then you have Niara, who was in the military, and from being in the military, then, yes, discovered alien abduction, but then also the covert ops involvement. But it came from being in the military first, you know, I'm saying, so it's like coming from alien abduction, coming from mind control, coming from a military background. And then Alara, who, again, in the military, but then became, in the more classic sense of super soldier, that I think the training that was derived from people like myself, Misha, Niara, and other cases I have, I think Alara sounds like it's a perfect example of someone where they've taken that training they've derived from people like us and then are using someone and training them and applying it to someone. And I think Niara crosses that boundary from, obviously, I mean, Niara, you had come to this by being in the military, to finding out you're an abductee, to finding out about the MyLab, but then it came full circle for you to also being used in the program. And then they kind of shortcutted that to Alara, who then went straight into the program. And then, on the other hand, we have Lorianne, who's someone who's just discovering she has these memories, is in the beginning process. Now, I don't know, Lorianne, if you have a military background. I haven't picked that up in anything you've said. But if you came to it from, were you an alien abductee who then figured out, were you a mind control who then figured out, and you're the discovery process where you're going to find out what your chain of events was. But I just have found it so interesting that we have like five different unfoldments of the process in each of our stories. And I hope that brings clarity to the audience, even though it may seem very confusing. All these different ways that someone could be in the military and have this happen, that someone could be an abductee and get used in the program, that someone could be involved in mind control as a child and get used in the program, or that someone could be, and I know many cases of people who are in the military who are then, like, recruited into the program from there, much like Alara, or in the case of Miara, that also applies to her. So we have a crossover here and a good cross-section of how this happens and people can be involved in these programs. And many people get involved, like Alara, into that whole aspect that is the paranormal aspect, the psi component, the remote viewing, the psychokinesis and telekinesis, that whole aspect. And I think that's one of the things they're learning from the people who are the abductees. And yet there's people who are fully involved in this program who have no alien component. And then there's people who their alien component doesn't come up into it till much later. But I'm just saying, I think it's really great that we've had a cross example amongst this group demonstrating the complexity and the way that this can unfold in someone's life. I just wanted to add that.
You know, and
I'd like to add with that too. I listened some time ago to a interview with Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips, and Mark Phillips mentioned the standardized testing process in schools, where you take the little pencil and you black out the little section that's supposed to leave the right answer.
I don't think it's been my.
Sorry, excuse me about that. The standardized testing that we were all put through in school. There may be responses in those tests that mark a child for this kind of activity. You know, like if you're intuitive, if something in your test shows that you're an intuitive person, they may earmark that person and say, okay, this person could be good to use for our purposes in this way or that way. And I think that's another way that children get marked and pulled into these programs.
So there's an induction. Is there some kind of what was I going to say? It's like a cult ritual abuse. Okay, you grant people special abilities at the end of this ritual, but you damage that person so that you can continue to control them, and then you make them forget that it happened, so that they can't come back at you. Okay, but I don't think even the people who are conducting these rituals really understand the potential or the capacity of the human mind or the human spirit yet.
Not at all. I don't think they expected us to get better. I really, honestly, I think they believed that we would not come through this at all. And funny enough, I was just thrown into the military because they wanted to see how well I did. And then they popped one of my implants in an MRI machine, and I started remembering who I was. But they knew what I was from, I think, the very beginning when I was born at Stanford Research Hospital. So I was brought in specifically for certain things, because I had my first out-of-body experience when I was one and a half, two years old, that I remember when I cracked my head open, was stuck in the hospital. And then I died. I almost died when I drowned and was out of my body again. So I think these things happened as they're watching me to see what happens. Then they're like, oh, how about you go into the military? Because the military wasn't my idea. I hung out with a bunch of military intelligence people since I was 15, 14 years old, because I couldn't stand people my own age. So I was already indoctrinated into the military intelligence community at that point. And then they're like, oh, why don't you just go in? And I was like, oh, that's a great idea, just to see if it'd work. But it didn't. I was only in for a very short period of time until I got out very easily, and then was then just by suggestion from certain people to move to certain parts of the country for a little while, at a couple years at a time.
It sounds like somebody's playing with your life.
And this is Melinda again. I just want to also add exactly that, you know, and Alara, you know, I think you were cutting in and out a little bit, at least over my phone, but I also think, you know, that idea to join the military could have been something that idea was kind of given to you, because I have found that in cases, too, where people are influenced to actually follow that path because they want them eventually in that program. But another thing, so yes, I agree with what Niara is saying regarding the school testing and stuff being maybe one of the ways. There's probably multiple ways, but one thing I do know also, in a majority of the cases of people who've had these kinds of things, whether it's the super soldier stuff, the mind control stuff, the alien abduction, or any crossover activity in those various areas, is it runs in families. And it tends to be that certainly the intuitive abilities runs in the family, the alien abduction runs in families, the mind control stuff runs in families. And so I think that they're, you know, looking for people with
those backgrounds, those abilities, and again, studying it in families, because I have found, you know, consistently that this goes back generations in people's families. So I think that's another aspect. I think, you know, there's multiple ways they could know and watch and follow individuals to find those individuals that are of the ilk that they want, that are of the either the abilities or the training or the experience, you know, but it's probably a little of all the above.
Now, you also mentioned, Melinda, that Misha would be chomping at the bit to cut in here. Misha?
Well, yes, actually. We were talking about how people don't make it through. In my support groups that I've had since 1992, and now I'm back again doing them since 2010. I also have some ones on the internet. I talk to ritualistic abuse and MeLabs and the MK Ultra, and there's so many of them that are basically lost. I mean, to talk to them, they've almost, to me, even seem like they're schizo. Now, I may seem schizo to people too, but they're terrified. I know I at one point in my life I was that way too. So I really have to look back on that. But people in my group, they'll be in my group for a couple sessions, and then they say, "I'm being monitored. I know I am, and I have to stop." And I says, "No, don't let them do that to you. You continue to speak out and show that you have the strength to stand in your ground." But they will run and hide all the time. I have people all the time will come to one or two groups, and then they're terrified. A lot of the younger ones that I have in my local group, there's a couple of them, and they are I think, I can't remember what they call it, but they're accessed via their mind and through dreams, and they're injured all the time. They're hurt. They're in their dreams. They do injuries to them, whether or not they're out of body in and they're taking them in super soldier. I'm not positive sure, but I know that they talk about how if I talk, they're going to come and get me. They're going to hurt me. So I just think that it's really important that people realize that the safety is in talking, not in hiding.
Yeah, those remote holographic dream training scenarios technically aren't used really to keep them quiet. They're actually used to see where the person is psychologically and mentally able to stand up for themselves. I constantly have those, and I'm constantly fighting. I mean, not fighting, but figuring out my scenarios and beating the game, really. And I continue to surprise whoever's running those training scenarios because I'm, like, fearless. I'm just like, ha, 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 what are you going to do to me now, right? Like, I play D&D. I totally got this. Like, the more creatively you think, the more you can just believe that you have the ability to do it, the more you protect yourself in those realms, and all of a sudden you become untouchable. But I think that also means the first step is getting rid of that fear. I mean, I flip off remote viewers all the time. I'm like, hey, guys, what's up? I see you watching me. What up now? Like, cool, I'm eating some breakfast, what do you want? And it's once you kind of get that attitude that they're not going to take you out, you're still part of the, even the after program, they want to see what happens. You're still part of the experiment. They're not going to cut the experiment short, not unless you start naming names, and even then it's you're safe. Because
they've got too much invested in you.
Yeah, they want to see how you, why did you break free? Why are you lucid? Why are you not running and hiding under a rock?
Prevent other people from waking up too.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the thing that occurred to me. You know, if you've been programmed in order to have these certain responses or abilities, it means that perhaps over time and with equivalent levels of experimentation and trials and tribulations, you might be able to deprogram yourself.
Yes, that's right.
I've actually the only contact that I've had, I was never abducted by aliens. I've always been a contactee where I've willingly been on ship going like, what's up, guys? How's it going? And they've helped me reprogram implants I've had because I've asked for it. They're like, well, we can't help you unless you ask. You know, it's a free will planet. And I go, please, don't get rid of them, just change them so I can use them. And they said, sure, go ahead. And yeah, then I'm like, okay, cool. Like, thanks for the help. You know, you ask for help. If you have it, then take it and do everything you can to get out of that mind rat maze that stuck you in.
Now, when you see people who...
Oh, go ahead,
Minnie. Could I please just say one thing? Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
It's been a long time indeed.
But I'm here now.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. This is the Super Soldier Roundtable Discussion. We've got Melinda the Abductee, Lorraine Fenton, the organiser of the Super Soldier Summit, available at supersoldiersummit.com. Just making sure to get a plug in there, Liam.
Thank you.
And we have Niara Easley, who's talking about electronic warfare and UFOs and trauma-based mind control. Misha Johnson was born into a kind of a mind control family, and... Alara, who's kind of born into a super soldier program, one of the new breed. And also, I wanted to reiterate a point that Douglas Dietrich made on the show previous, is that military will often name things the opposite of what they really are. So they'll name a giant, massive tank a mouse, or they'll make a really tiny little tank and call it a Goliath. And call a super soldier a super soldier, not because they're necessarily super people or what have you, but because they're very, very damaged. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Who wants to grab that one?
Well, let's go on from that point, because we wanted to talk about families. What does this do to families? Does anybody want to jump in there?
I can. That's hard. Growing up, I'm pretty sure my mom had her memory wiped a whole lot because she constantly forgot us places and wasn't really there, I guess. So I kind of grew up in this non-family family. My dad was taken away from the family very young, divorce, for reasons that really not even my mom can tell me. And it was just kind of always hectic. Like, my sister and I were always in survival mode. And I think that was a way to have me latch onto my handler, whoever that was at the time that was doing mission operations with me, to see them as a secure, stable force in my life. So I felt very connected to that person and want to do things for them because my mom couldn't care less what we did. She just was worried about trying to get food on the table and was working all the time. But I recently did talk to my father, and he said, I'm really sorry that they picked you up for the projects. You know, 30 years later, I'm telling him about this. And he knows exactly what I'm talking about when I've only been in contact with him for the last maybe 4 years. And the first time I brought it up was last year. And he said, yeah, he goes, I'm not surprised. You are my only daughter. He goes, but, you know, I'm really, really sorry that you had to go through all that. So for me, it is in my family. I don't know my grandfather because he died, I think, about 15, 20 years ago. So I can't ask him about it, but I'm pretty sure that extended back to him as well.
Might I offer a suggestion that perhaps the only families that are involved in these type of programs are not loving, caring, kind, helpful nuclear families in the conventional sense, and they're predominantly dysfunctional?
In my case, I can say yes. Definitely very dysfunctional, to the point that my sister and I joke about it.
Yes. I would say yes.
Yeah.
So in order to get a child into a different situation without them reacting too badly, because you know when you take kids to the first day of school, they don't want to leave you because they love you and they need you. Maybe they get rid of that element so that you can pose as the new savior.
You're special was used a lot. Like, no, yes. We appreciate you. It's almost like it was this weird reverse psychology thing where it's like, oh, well, you know, your parents just don't know what they're missing. You know, we appreciate what you can do and you're very special. And I'm like, oh, I hate that word. Like, it still rankles me some days. But they're like, you're gifted. You know, it was one of those kind of things. Like, oh, I don't know. It's just, yeah, I can just see the BS of it now looking back on it. But as a little kid, you don't know any better. You know, your mom's ignoring you, and these people think you're awesome. Who are you going to like better at this point? Who are you going to feel more supported by? So.
Which would lead me to believe that the people running these programs are psychotic people with no conscience. If they're willing to abuse and manipulate children to that extent, it doesn't leave a whole lot of options for any other personality types to be involved in these programs, does it?
I've never run across anybody that could tell me that these people are caring, loving, normal people. Everywhere I turn, their handlers, the people they've been involved with, anybody, the satanic ritual abuse, anything that's happened to them, it's all happened from very psychotic people doing this. And I don't know where they come from, because I try not to know people like that. You know, it's like, are your best friends like that? No, not at all. And so how did they wrangle these people? You know, I'm still trying to figure that out.
What if they have two subsets of dysfunctional families, one to produce psychopaths to recruit to run these horrible programs, and one to produce victims to induct into the programs to be experimented upon?
That's extremely insightful, and somebody else grabbed that one.
Yeah, I'd like to answer that, and I'm not positive. I haven't found out for sure, but this is Misha, and, you know, I was born in 49, okay, so five of my siblings died before I was born in very odd ways, and so I never really figured out what was going on with it. However, my father on his deathbed actually did make a confession that he had to turn me over to the projects because they'd already killed my others, and they're gone. Now, he said they're gone and they're killed. He didn't say that they were all dead. So, and we as a family have never been able to find their birth certificate, their death certificates. So I'm not even sure that the missing siblings that I had are not already in the program. They're really diabolical. I mean, if they convince this family that they're going to lose all their kids if they don't finally just give one completely over without any reservation at all, then and that's all I can figure out that happened.
That would be a way to...
He apologized and said he was sorry, and, you know, he would go to his death feeling.
But it occurs to me that if you wanted to create a family where the children can be preyed upon, it would make sense to prey upon the parents of the family first, and they will pass that down to their children just by the way they get raised.
Yes. My father was definitely preyed upon. Totally. I mean, he had... and we always thought it was just abuse, but he had horrible, horrifying things happen to him as a child that he told my mother, and I look back on it, had to have been abused. He also learned how to be a magician, and so he could do hypnosis and all of those things. He had a magic show, so he could take the kids on the road without anybody thinking anything. I'm not saying my father was a saint, but I do forgive him, but I know he was mind control. That's why he did what he did to all of us.
Okay. Now, another thing that occurred to me, I believe, Alara, you were talking about how you responding to these programs as though they're a game, and you just simply have an attitude switch, and you're able to control the situation much better. And it reminded me of when I was a boy, there was this computer game named, Doom, I think? And it's like a first-person shooter, and you're shooting demons and stuff like that. It scared the heck out of me as a kid playing it. And but it had this cheat code for God mode. What was it? IDDQD. And I remember this one time I was having a dream, and it was really scaring me. And then I typed in the cheat code in my dream, and nothing could hurt me, just like in the game. And ever since then, I've never had a dream that was scary or damaging to me, or wake up in a cold sweat, because whenever I get into those situations, I've got God mode available for me, kind of thing.
Right, and that's the creative use of being able to take your environment, like video games was the worst idea ever for our new generation. I'm like, that's how we get out of these programs, because it helps you think outside the box and go, oh, it's, you know, once you become just lucid enough to realize it's not real, then you can use these kind of codes. So I've done kind of the same thing where I was like, cut, and we're done. I'm not dealing with this. Every time I see zombies, I just turn into a movie. I'm like, nope, not playing with the zombie game. I quit. And yeah, that's helpful. It's been very, very helpful. But, you know, 4 years ago, I was a mess. I was a wreck. I could barely stand up for myself. I had people in my life that took it every chance they could to cut me down and take me out of my power. And there just comes a point where you have to get pissed off enough to go, I don't want to take this anymore. And it was very painful, but it was part of my awakening experience. And that was before I knew anything was going on. Even though I was having contact with ETs at the time, it was still a year of me trying to figure out that I was able to take care of myself and function before they dumped this whole military black ops memory stuff back on me. And then I was like, what is going on? But at that point, luckily, I'd learned the skills to cope so that I could to get through this all. And then try to, you know, at this point now be able to laugh about it. But it doesn't mean I don't take it seriously.
Hmm. Now, also, the what was I going to say? There's two types of these people, and again, we seem to be split into group. Like, there's the abusers and the abused, and then within the abused, there's the subcategories of the healers, the ones who actually manage to either self-medicate or meditate or in otherwise develop and deprogram themselves from these kind of trauma programs. What is it that separates you ladies from perhaps other people who have participated in the programs who have not been able to get over it, start dealing with it, learn how to laugh again and that kind of thing?
Well, one of the things, if I can chime in there, one of the things that really helped me was I've been a spiritual person from the cradle up. And, you know, this is going to sound kind of unusual, but as I've peeled back the layers around my healing process, I have been left with, I don't know how to say this, I was left with the kind of the fact that I'm one of Dolores Cannon's volunteer souls, like an ET soul that decided to take on a human lifetime. And the way that I have come to understand it, and I've put this together with hypnosis session help from Mary Rodwell, is that I actually took on this lifetime because I wanted to help my people get information about what it's like to be an individual human on planet Earth under extraordinarily difficult circumstances. So I was born into a family that imprinted me with the vibration of abuse, and therefore I would attract, you know, being in a program. And some of the things I'm hearing now make me wonder, you know, if one or both of my parents were involved with this, because my dad was in the Army. He was in World War II. And so anyway, this is what I've come to feel. And, you know, I don't have a huge investment in people believing this. You know, it's just been part of my own process to try to come to an understanding of this. But the more I've looked and the more I've peeled around the layers away around my own healing, that's what it looks like. And so it's kind of like they need information about what it's like for individual humans down here. And so that's what I've been providing for them, but not in any sinister sense of the word, just more of a, how do I want to put it? It's just information gathering. And then what I remembered from the Mary Rodwell session was being taken on the ship and put into a tube that when they turned on this glass tube, I'd be in there, and I'd be in there in my astral body. So they'd put me in the tube, and they'd turn it on, and sound and light waves would start bouncing back and forth on the inside of this round glass tube, and it would pass through my astral body, and it would upload all my experience about what it is to be an Earth human into the holographic systems of their ship. And, you know, again, I don't have any investment in anybody telling, you know, thinking that that's for real. It's just my private feeling that that's what's been going on. But
now, you mentioned that you've been pulling back layers through your own experiences and that kind of thing. Do you feel that there's still many, many more layers to peel back, or have you kind of come to the end of the onion?
Well, I wish that I could say that I'd come to the end of the onion, but I'm not sure that I have. Every time I think that I'm completely better, I bump into a place where I'm not, you know, where I'm still angry, where I'm still wounded. And it's like, you know, it's like this. It's like, you know, for a normal human being on planet Earth, you're born into a family, and, you know, your family, because of their particular problems or neuroses, they kind of dump a bunch of programming on you that affects you later on in your life. Well, people like ourselves, we have an extra dose of programming that's even more intense and more insidious than what we get from family.
So, now, unfortunately, we're coming to break. You wonder how exhausting it must be, wondering whether or not you'll ever get over the experience. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment here of the Super Soldier Roundtable discussion. These lovely ladies will be at the Super Soldier Summit soon. And I think it's supersoldiersummit.com
if you want to get yourself some tickets. Vinny, if it's okay with you, I'd like to just give everybody a heads up. It's really important that everybody buy their tickets now and reserve their rooms. Next week, the room price goes back up to normal. So you've got to do it now. It's vital that I know that we've got a following at this event, and buying your tickets early will really help out. And there's going to be so many people there that are involved in this. You're going to get the history of mind control. You're going to get the history of the super soldiers. You're going to get what's going on right now in electronic harassment and mental communication, controlling people through microwaves. And, you know, we have people coming that you guys, it's absolutely amazing. You've got to look at the lineup. I'm adding more people every day that are going to be speaking. I have people coming to this that just called me and said, look, I really, really want to speak at your conference. It's that important to me. And they're actually paying their way to get there. So, I mean, that's how important this is to people. So we're doing it on a shoestring budget. So please, 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 you know, if you can donate and support the event and you can't be there, please do so. Another thing we're looking into this week is we're possibly, if we can sell enough tickets to pay the hotel fees, we're going to do a live stream. And I'm announcing it here on your show for the first time. So everybody, check the website within the next few days. There might be a button up there that says live stream happening. We have this many more tickets to sell, and we'll just count it down. And as soon as we sell that last ticket ahead of time, we'll do that live stream for everybody all over the world. And it'll be very affordable, but we've really got to sell a certain amount of tickets in order for us to be able to do the live stream. So everybody, if you're on the West Coast, if you're even on the East Coast of America, and you can get to this, please do. It's not that expensive. It's $100 for the whole weekend. The rooms are very inexpensive, and flying to Vegas from LA is like $150. You can drive there for $120. I mean, it's just, it's an amazingly cheap event, and I did that on purpose so everybody could get there from all over the United States. So I really hope you can join us. That's supersoldiersummit.com. Check out the people speaking on the website, and they're going to be a lot of surprise guests there. I mean, a lot. I've already got four that I can't mention their names, but people are just going to be blown away. So really, if you can get there, this is the event of the year as far as this type of thing goes, with conspiracy, super soldiers, aliens, the whole bit. This is the one that if you're going to make it to this one. There you go. So supersoldiersummit.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The show's kind of like a bathtub. Doesn't work very well without a plug, I found.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Now, in terms of where we want to wrap up, Alara, you had an interesting point that you made over the break about why it's actually important to get angry. You know, the you called it the divine masculine. Could you elucidate?
I just got finished going to Pennsylvania for the Free Your Mind conference, too. And a lot of great, great things got brought up. And one of those was that, just very briefly, is that there's this programming that's not just the left brain, you got to listen to your government and do what they say, but the right brain, it's the New Age, the very dangerous part of the New Age movement, which is, just roll over and let everything happen. Yes, there's a point of nonviolence and feeling in oneness and being kind, but when push comes to shove, you should defend yourself, and that's what the divine masculine embodies, is that, you know, once you have healed yourself, stand up for what you believe in and don't let this to continue anymore. Don't stand by and watch as other people get hurt by this. Stand up and say something, because the more truth you speak, the more you awaken people to what's actually going on around them, the more collectively together we can, you know, fight back just on a consciousness level of looking at what's really, really happening instead of just, let's just believe all the lies we're being fed. And I think that's why it's really important to have conferences like this, like the Super Soldier Conference. You know, once you people see what this is, and when they come to these conferences, yeah, you're going to understand what's actually going on. And so I'm really excited for the Super Soldier Summit, because not only are we going to see the history of it, people who have been involved in this and researching it, and people have come out the other side, you know, and it's very, you know, just to know what's going on. I mean, this stuff's atrocious. It pisses me off. Tell you what, you know, part of me wanted to just sit back and be like, what can I do? I'm not going to talk about this anymore. You know, I don't want to deal with the people that, you know, make things up on the internet about me. But then a part of me rebelled so atrociously against that, because it's like, well, screw them. Like, I'm going to do something and say what I'm going to say, and I don't care what anybody else says. I don't care if anybody believes me, but I'm going to make sure I'm going to speak my truth, because this is wrong. On a soul level, as a being coming from another place to experience this life on Earth, this is bullshit. And, you know, it needs to stop. And I think that's what this whole awakening thing needs to happen, is that people need to understand that these are atrocious acts being done by humans to other humans. And we cannot let this continue, or we're just going to continue to be slaves here. Like, we need to actually work together and make a difference. You can't just sit back and wait for somebody to come save you. We're not going to be, all of a sudden one day, everything's going to be happy and nice. No, we have to save ourselves, and we have to do it together. And we have to stop putting up with all of this. So
that's right.
Sorry. That's my rant.
it's very well taken. And in fact, I was just reading a message board, the Vinnie Eastwood Show Radio Alliance, and there's a comment in there by Clint Richardson saying that peaceful, non-violent, non-compliance doesn't work. You know, name a system in nature, whether it's bears, amoebas, or white blood cells, or whatever, that doesn't commit any violence and winds up being successful. It just doesn't happen. But what I'm conscious of is that it's not necessarily about violence when you've got a entire spectrum of things that are wrong. there's many, many places where basically violence will only do the trick, you know, if some scumbag has got a gun on your family or something like that, you're not going to talk him out of it. He's a psychopath.
That's not violence. Right? That's not violence. That's force. And this, oh my God, okay. I hope when this video comes out, I'll post it everywhere, but the violence is the act of hurting somebody else at the expense of you don't care what's happening to them. Force is standing up and drawing that line in the sand saying, I'm not going to take it anymore. And a good point that was brought up was that, you know, when teachers in school go, oh, I don't care, it doesn't matter who started it, you're both in trouble. No, you know what? It does matter who started it. It does, because one person's a bully and one person tried to stop that bully. If the bully in the first place didn't try to harm somebody else, there would be nothing, there would be no violence whatsoever. Violence is the act of actively choosing to harm somebody else without any care of consequence. Force is saying, I'm not going to take it anymore. And that's not violence at all. And I think that's been completely misconstrued throughout this whole thing as part of the global mind control of these different movements that are happening.
You're absolutely right. It didn't occur to me until you said it.
And there you go.
That's the obfuscation of your own resistance, right? Have you noticed that anybody starts to do anything good, and all these names and obfuscations of meaning start to come up in order to muddy the waters and demonize you and turn you into a bad person?
Exactly, and that's why these conferences are so important, because these concepts that people just don't even realize are out there. You know, there's a way to get out of this. There's a way to see the truth of the matter and go, this is what's being done. And that's why the Super Soldier Summit that's coming up, awesome. Because now we're not even just dealing with the normal obfuscation of, you know, media, but the active screwing with people's minds that did not ask for this. You know, we're bringing that to light, sharing our stories and going, look, this is what happens. And if it's happened to you, there's a way out. We can actually live productive lives and be happy. And, you know, to those of us who've been in the program, yeah, there's a point where I thought I'd never be happy in my life, ever, until I met people like this that showed me that, yes, you can find a better place within yourself. You know, and that coming together for healing is really, really important.
All right. Well, speaking of coming together, we only have about a minute left together. So, go round and a couple of sentences each, really, I think it might be fair. Melinda, are you there? Hello? Okay, she's not there. What about Misha?
Yes, I'm here. I just say everybody should go to the Soldier Summit. They need to learn really what is going on and what has been going on for, you know, since the 40s probably, but certainly in the 60s and 70s and on since then. So we need to stand up and be heard. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Niara?
Yeah, I would second a lot of what Misha said. People really need to understand this is real. They need to understand the research and the mechanics behind it. It's the only way to stop it. It's why I went public. I just, you know, I had a startling thought occur to me when I was trying not to go public. I just thought, you know, my silence makes me an accessory to this. And that was an absolutely intolerable thought. And that was about the time I started going public.
Lorian?
Well, everyone, I just want to thank you, Vinny, for having us on today. And ladies, you were wonderful as usual. I love you all for doing this for me. And the Super Soldier Summit is actually called Super Soldiers and Mind Control Summit 2. And you can find out much more about it and buy your ticket, make your hotel reservation very soon at supersoldiersummit.com. And you will be blown away. We have some amazing people coming to this.
Okay, that's pretty much all she wrote. Unfortunately, we don't have any more time. Thank you, ladies. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vinny.
Thank you, Vinny.
All right, we'll see you again, and may the healing begin. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Thank you very much for doing so. This is an entirely listener-supported show. If you can subscribe for a couple of dollars a month or make a donation, it'd be very much appreciated. We'll see you again sometime.